Hello, everyone, and welcome to the second episode of the Secret Chronic Society. This is your host, Raquel. This show highlights the importance of learning more about invisible illnesses and how people suffering from them are affected day by day in our society. We know that living with a chronic illness can be extremely hard on an individual, but what exactly does it mean for someone whose chronic illness is not seen by others? That is exactly what we strive to highlight for our listeners, to learn more about various invisible illnesses and create more awareness for those suffering from them. Today, we'll kick things off by getting into what empathy looks like for those standing beside someone with an invisible illness. We'll also dive into the main takeaway for the episode. Our show will feature personal stories from an interview with an individual that is very near and dear to my heart, who faces the challenges of having an invisible illness, shedding light on her daily battles, victories, and the strategies she uses to navigate the rough patches. Wrapping it up, we'll share some words of wisdom and advice from our guests to fellow chronic sufferers, reminding them to stay resilient and keep pushing forward because what they're going through is important and entirely valid. Although their illness is invisible to others, they, as an individual, are not invisible. Last episode, we looked more at what empathy is. For this episode, let's take a look at more of what empathy looks like in comparison to sympathy. Feel free to go back to our last episode to learn more about empathy from Josie. To help us better understand this concept in relation to those who have an invisible illness, let's take another look at Dr. Brené Brown. In one of her RSA short videos, which can be found on YouTube, she reveals that empathy fuels connection while sympathy drives disconnection. With empathy, you can feel with people. This is important. Dr. Brown gives an example to depict this. She says it's like when someone is in a dark room and they say, "I'm stuck," or "It's dark," or "I'm overwhelmed." And someone else climbs down to them to say, "Hey, like, I know what it's like. I've been here before and you are not alone." Sympathy, on the other hand, is not even taking the step to climb down to join them in that dark room. As you can see, empathy requires action, not simply just observing someone who is reaching out to you and being standoffish towards them. Dr. Brown even goes so far as to say that rarely ever does an empathetic response begin with, at least. In the case of standing alongside someone with an invisible illness, you may not know exactly how they feel, and that is totally okay. It is just best to seek to be empathetic rather than trying to offer them comfort with a statement that starts with "at least," or as I like to call it, an "at least" statement. Here to offer her insight on this topic is our guest, Mahala. Mahala is actually a friend of mine whom I met during my freshman year of college. I'm currently a senior, so I've known her for some time. And she's from Washington State, and she's one of the most outgoing individuals I know. She was diagnosed with seronegative rheumatoid arthritis. Here is how my interview with Mahala went. Hello, everyone. My name is Raquel, and I'm here with my friend Mahala.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing good. How are you?
Good. I'm doing good. I'm good. I just wanted to thank you for accepting this interview and, like, being willing to be questioned on this topic.
Oh, thank you for having me. I'm excited to talk about it.
Awesome. I'm just going to jump right in. So my first question for you is, if you feel comfortable, can you describe your diagnosis journey and your experience with medical professionals?
Yeah, my diagnosis journey is very unique because when all of this happened, my diagnosis is seronegative rheumatoid arthritis, which means it doesn't show up in the blood work, but we have enough symptoms to work with, and that's going to be important for later. But the reason it was unique is because when this all happened, I had to quit my job in Colorado and move in with my parents in Washington. And the only reason I was able to get into a rheumatologist and go that direction with this pain that I had experienced was because a friend was diagnosed with rheumatoid arthritis 4 months prior. Mm. And she went through all of this. And I was talking to her and saying, these are very similar. Mm. And so because of that, I was able to get ahead of it. And even then, it took 5 months to diagnose and to get medicine that would work with it. We went through other medicines to cross out any others. But we didn't have time to get all the other doctors were booked months out. Mm. And I was lucky enough to get in with a rheumatologist in a month up in Washington. So I don't know how that happened. I'm very thankful for it. So again, it's very unique because I've heard lots of stories. I've gotten to meet lots of people who struggle with rheumatoid arthritis, and the treatment, it took 5 months to figure out what medicine to put me on and if it was going to be compatible, like if I was going to feel any negative side effects or anything. Since moving back to Oregon, I switched to a new rheumatologist. And these two rheumatologists were not on the same page in how they wanted to go about treating this. So my treatment is halted, essentially, right now, which is hard because I would like to continue the progress that I've been making, but I also have not been educated on what that progress is going to look like in the long run. So that's kind of,
And for listeners, can you describe what a rheumatologist is? Like, what kind of doctor?
So a rheumatologist, they deal with rheumatoid. So what rheumatoid arthritis is, it's an autoimmune disease, and it attacks your joints. And so rheumatologists basically deal with the immune system and how that responds to the joints. And they treat, so for example, I don't know, there's like different medications that will like decrease immune system activity and increase, like decrease inflammation. And so they work specifically with that. Gotcha. And so with my diagnosis of seronegative, my treatment is halted because since it's not seropositive, she doesn't want to keep building off these medications if it's not the immune system, because it could be something else, right? And so she's wanting to halt.
And then what are your specific coping mechanisms that you use to deal with your illness?
That's a good question. I'm still figuring that out because it fluctuates a lot. So when I'm in minimal pain, I'm just thankful. Mm-hmm. When I'm in a lot of pain, it kind of goes downhill. I would say the biggest is having community that understands. I have a, like I said, that friend who got diagnosed 4 months prior to me has been a huge part of this coping, and she's, you know, 4 months ahead of me and everything. And so she's been able to encourage me. People introduce me to other people with this disease, and they just kind of point out realities that I've not accepted, I think. And so it's, I think that community is a big part of coping, being able to talk with people and share what I'm going through, because it's so evident to me. And
yeah, having others who understand what you're going through.
Yeah.
And people who may not understand, but like are willing to step with you in this process
and just hear me out and share all that.
And have you ever experienced discrimination related to your illness, and what is the biggest misunderstanding that someone like you faces from other people?
So it's kind of, I thought this question was really funny when I first read it, because it's the misunderstanding part that I got, because I'm 26 and people don't usually get diagnosed with this until they're in their like 40s, 50s, later in age, it makes more sense. And my friend was also diagnosed at 26, so, or 25 I was diagnosed with. And so I think the biggest thing is misunderstanding, because people see me and they see this young woman who's just like bright and cheery, and they think, oh, she's fine. She can help us lift these tables or do all this stuff or go on a hike. You know, I do have my water bottle. It has all the places that I visited, and people will look at that and say, let's go hiking together. And I'd say, I am still at like 2 miles, maybe. That's the extent I can do now. So I think that the biggest misunderstanding is that people look at me and just kind of take it at face value. And it feels really awkward trying to, because I want to communicate, but I get tired of communicating like what I can and can't do. And sometimes I can do more some days, and sometimes I do less. And so that's another misunderstanding, is when I do communicate what's going on with me, people kind of overcompensate for that and then make me feel like I can't do anything. And so it's a balance. It's a really hard thing to balance.
And you mentioned that some days are worse than others. What would you say would be like the trigger for you on those bad days of like flare up?
That's different with everyone. I'm still learning mine. I know that when I need like 100% over 8 hours of sleep. Like if I get like 7.5, I hurt a lot the next day.
Okay.
Sugar processed foods. Mm-hmm. So like fast food really affects it. Mm-hmm. Diet really impacts. Want to like kind of look into anti-inflammatory diet, which a lot of people are like really like committed to that, but they've had years. And so when they try to introduce it to me, I'm kind of like, okay, I'm still a year in. Mm-hmm. I still love chocolate chip cookies. Yes. It's so hard to let that go. And so I kind of plan ahead. I kind of like, okay, what am I doing this weekend? I'm going to have a chocolate chip cookie. So those are the two things that I've realized is rest and food. Stress is very related to flare-ups, and so being able to have good stress management is good, which I've not figured out, but that's what my doctor says. So
yes, yeah. You have time to figure it out. Kind of going back to, like, you mentioned anti-inflammatory diets. Like, what does that include? Because I didn't know that was a kind of diet. So would that
kind of look like? Yeah, so there's inflammatory foods, and of course, I've not looked into it, but processed sugar contributes to that. Mm-hmm. Honey is a natural sugar, so it's pretty good. You don't have to worry about that. Or, like, you can even, like, put in, like, processed, like, flour. Like, processed foods in general. Like, I know I love Taco Bell. I have not eaten it in a hot second because when I finally understood that was making my feet like flare up so bad, I would just lay on the couch all day.
Yeah.
And I didn't know that was a correlation. I think there's like anti-inflammatory foods, and I can't think of anything right now, but I know that they're like okay, and they like are actually, they boost you rather than, so like you don't want to just look for non-inflammatory foods. You want to look for things that like really boost that anti-inflammatory and help the meds in that fighting it. I've been given so many resources. It's overwhelming, and it's I'm very thankful for them, but I've not had the chance to like really dive into that because my life has been so much transition since I was diagnosed, since I quit my job in Colorado. Just constant transition. So once I get settled in, I can actually focus on health, oddly enough.
And then what do you think contributes to the controversy over how people view and accept invisible illnesses in society?
Yeah, well, with that, I didn't really know much about, like, everybody, but I was able to draw on from my own experience. Yeah. In college, I remember people saying they have health issues, and they would say that, and they wouldn't really tell what that was. Mm-hmm. But for me, all I thought was, oh, now we have to, like, dumb this down for someone else. Or I'd go out to like parks and I'd be like, they're making this too accessible for everyone, like it's too crowded. And I've just been so humbled. I was very selfish at the time. And now I'm just like, wow, I'm so glad that they made this climb up to like this high place accessible, that they have elevators here or things like that, so that I can still experience this. And so I just know from my personal experience, it was like, oh, why would we need to do that? And I think that there are people out there thinking of these things and caring about these things, like even exercise. Like, I was a runner and now I love the elliptical. I used to think the elliptical was such a lame machine. I was like, why would anyone do that? And because it's so low impact on the joints, I can get a good cardio exercise without that. And I'm just like, people think of these. Or even a mouse. You know, like having a vertical mouse on my wrist is the most, it's like a vacation. It's so nice. But anyway, yeah. So I don't know. I can't really speak for like how other people really view or accept invisible illnesses. I think that a lot of people don't know about them. And especially that it can be for younger people. I have a cousin she's been dealing with an autoimmune disease, arthritis in her spine since high school. And I didn't know about it. So I didn't know the pain that she struggled with. And so, yeah, I didn't know that those things could happen at such a young age, so randomly in life. And so I think that it's just the lack of knowledge.
For sure.
Yeah.
I would say the same thing as well. Like, I didn't really know too much about it before, like, this podcast or even just like this group project. So it's interesting that you mentioned that, because for me too. Let's see, you mentioned community earlier and like how it supports you and helps you cope. How do you think more of a sense of community could be built to support those suffering with an invisible illness, and how would you promote more awareness?
Yeah, I think it would be so nice. Because my friend, she was directed to an online community where people could post and share in their day.
Yeah.
And if my doctor did that for me, that would be so nice to just be able to like say like, oh, I'm part of this Facebook group. Or like, because the best thing that I've had is people in my community saying, I don't know anything about that, but I know this person who's dealt with it for 30 plus years. And getting to talk with them has been like, even just like, it doesn't even have to be the same illness as me. It's just chronic pain in general. Getting to talk with them and having those shared experiences. And because otherwise, like me sitting and talking to my mom all day about my pain, she just wants to help. Mm-hmm. But talking to someone else who deals with pain, they just hear you because they know there's nothing you can do and you just want to be heard. Mm-hmm. And so I think that, like, having doctors be, like, having a set community or a space that's established and doctors, like, pointing you to that can be really helpful and make you feel less isolated in it, because mm-hmm. it does get isolating. Yeah. And promoting awareness. I have no idea how to promote awareness on this. I, even just sharing about myself to other people, it feels really awkward because I don't want to talk about myself, but I want them to understand, but I also just don't like talking about myself. So I don't really know how, and especially if people aren't, like, deeply invested in it, why would they care, right? So that's a good question, and I don't have an answer for that one.
I think you slightly mentioned one, like, having doctors know about communities in which, online communities, you mentioned, like, having them even point out, like, hey, like, I know I just diagnosed you with this, but you aren't alone in it, and, like, pointing the patient to this community could also work as well, because, in other words, they're just like, you're diagnosed with this and I'm just gonna send you out and help and treat
and you. That's what happened to me. So I was really lucky to have people already, but yeah, I think that would be a good way of,
I feel like there's of course there's gonna be more, but that's like a starting point. It's a good start. And lastly, is there some wisdom that you would like to share with someone who is going through something similar?
Yeah, I was excited about this because I had gotten this piece of wisdom from someone who had already gone through it. And I think that one of the biggest struggles is, like, you have this expectation for how your life trajectory is going to go and what you love to do and how often you can do those things. And when this first happens, you're kind of in denial. You're like, I'm going to get better. And then when you don't, you go through another wave of, I don't know if depression is it, but it gets pretty dark.
Yeah.
And you're like, will I ever get to run again? Will I ever get to hike? I wanted to hike that mountain. I wanted to run that marathon. And my friend, she was like, you need to let go of some dreams to make room for new ones. It's not a bad thing. There are so many great dreams, and these have been dreams of yours, but if you let go of these, you can make room for new ones. And for me, I was like, that's pessimistic. Why would I ever do that? That means I'm not going to get better. And it's like, but I am not going to be the same as I once was, and I'm probably not going to be able to climb that mountain. It's just not how medicine works right now. And so I think that was really freeing for me to be able to say, okay, like, what other dreams are out there? Like, what can I do? And I've gone from a person who was constantly on the go to someone who likes to stay in on a weekend and do puzzles with people. And I've just been able to shift my gaze, what I thought was going to happen, to more possibilities out there that I didn't see before.
That makes sense. Okay, wait, I want to add one more. Okay. I promise it's not too different from this last question, but what's some advice or wisdom that you would like to share with someone who isn't going through what you're going through, but wants to walk alongside someone who they know that may be struggling with an invisible illness?
That's a really good question. Yeah. I think they also kind of, like, having them, like, accept this person's gonna be in pain, and sometimes they just need an ear. And that's so nice, because it's hard to watch someone that you care about in pain. Or asking, because people ask, how are you? And there's two answers to that. It's, I'm good, like, emotionally great, but then physically, because it's just so evident in my life. I'm just like, one week I'm like, gosh, I'm in high spirits this week, but I'm hurting so much. And so I think, like, being able to check in and acknowledge this part of their life that's happening is really nice. And it makes them feel like it makes me feel seen for everything that's going on and cared for in that. And rather than just ignoring it and making it invisible in that relationship, you know, another thing that it would be. So
awesome. Well, I appreciate you again for willing to be questioned. Thank you so much.
Yeah. I appreciated you reaching out about this. It really filled me to, like, know that this was a conversation happening. Yes. So, yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
A key point to take away from this episode would be to be mindful of others and how important it is not to jump to conclusions about other people. In the interview for this episode, Mihaela mentioned that one of the biggest misunderstandings she comes across with her illness is the idea that people take her at face value. People assume that any form of arthritis is prone to occur only in older individuals. However, on the outside, she looks like she is a young adult. She looks like she's healthy. She looks like she can go for a hike or long runs or lift up heavy items, whatever it may be that a young person is deemed quote unquote to do. But she has to find the courage and the strength within herself to state her limits to others. And that takes vulnerability. Because these illnesses are invisible, it is best to not assume that someone is perfectly healthy. It is best to be mindful of the idea that they may not be able to go for that hike that you suggested, or that they may not be able to help you move because they physically cannot carry the heavy items that they look like they should be able to carry. Regardless, when they say that they can't do something, don't push for them to do it. The last topic we want to touch on is the importance of creating a welcoming space for all the chronics out there. What we have found through Secret Chronic Society is that many people feel judgment, lack of connection, or support because of what they go through without any kind of outlet to voice these feelings. Just like Mihaela mentioned earlier, community is a super important part to her coping and diagnosis journey. Imagine if everyone who suffers from an invisible illness is able to be part of a welcoming community, just like the one that Mihaela has found. I'm sure you can imagine that it would enable individuals not to feel so judged and have a sense of belonging, which can inevitably help them cope. With that, I want to thank you for listening to this episode of the Secret Chronic Society, and I want to thank Mihaela once again for participating in this podcast. We hope you listeners have learned something new that will help you from judging others and not make assumptions about the challenges somebody may be experiencing. And I just want to give a shout out to our TikTok, Secret Chronic Society. Head on over there for some educational videos about dealing with chronic pain and living with an invisible illness. And remember, just because you can't see it doesn't mean that someone can't feel it.